All right, an a priori power analysis. It starts with an estimate of the effect size you're looking for. Where does that come from? The literature. One of the things that you often end up doing is you read the literature, and when you read the literature, somewhere down on the corner or in a margin, you've calculated the effect size and scrawled that in there. And so you're looking, and the people that are studying the variables that you're studying keep finding effect sizes that are around 0.3. It's reasonable for you to conclude you're looking for an effect size of about 0.3. So here's how this works. We're going to use a power table. Oh, look, I have one. So this is the power table. There's a lot of different power tables. We're going to use this one. It was put together by a gentleman named Herb Freeman. It's been augmented by some work by Cohen and some work that we did because the Freeman family was nice enough to let me play with their patents and their copyrights. So here's the way it works. This is the effect size you think you're looking for, the R. It might be a direct correlation, or it might be correlation calculated from an F or from a chi-square. That's the great thing about this table is you can use it for everything. So here's your effect size, and this is the power that you want. The traditional amount of power for a priori power analyses in behavioral sciences is 80% power. We want to be 80% confident that we're going to reject the null if the null is false. Call it an industry standard, if you like. So, you take the effect size you think you have and the power that you want, and you bring those together, and that tells you what sample size you need in your study. How are we doing? Okay? So if we look here, this says I've got an effect size of 0.3, is what I'm looking for, and I'm going to use the standard amount of power. And so with an effect size of 0.3 and 80% power, we need 82 people in the study. All right? Pretty straightforward. What if I was looking at a 40%, or I want an effect size of 0.4, and I want a 90% chance of rejecting the null? What would my sample size be? 58. It's just that simple. When you're doing the pink things, because of course there's pink things, and when you're doing the exam, much of the time I will tell you what power to use. And I might say, I want 80% power. Or I might say, I only want a 20% risk of a type 2 error. So if I say I'm only willing to risk 20%, you know that we want 80% power. If I say I'm willing to risk 40%, you know that we want 60% power. How are we doing? And if I don't say anything, use 80. Right? So there's some rules to this. Now, here's the flip side, the post hoc power analysis. Let's say that I ran an analysis and I got a correlation of 0.3 and it's not significant. So I have retained the null. Either I have a correct retention or I have a type 2 error. I don't know. I would like to make a guess or an estimate of the probability that I just screwed up. I made a type 2 error. Because notice, this correlation is a 0.3. That's a medium-sized effect. Do you think we'd call it a medium-sized effect if it was little bitty tiny? We don't care if it's non-significant? You with me? So, what do? We're going to calculate the probability of a type 2 error, and one by first calculating the power. And 1 minus power is the probability of a type 2 error, just like we were talking about back here. So we calculate the probability of a type 2 error. 1 minus that gives us our post hoc power. In order to do a post hoc power analysis, I need two things. I need the effect size, which is easy because this study used R. So there's our effect size of 0.3. And I need S, which is what the table uses for sample size. The S for a correlation is degrees of freedom plus 2. Now, good news. On the second page of the power table, for use both on homeworks and you will have this for the exam, here it tells you how to calculate S for each of our statistics. Don't have to memorize formulas, even easy formulas. It's right here on the table. So for a correlation, S is the degrees of freedom plus 2 or the N. Let's go here. So if I have degrees of freedom of 30, which is what's always given in parentheses after the R, 30 plus 2, even on a Wednesday afternoon, is 32. So I'm going to go to the table with an effect size of 0.3 and a sample size of 32. So effect size of 0.3, and I'm looking in here for a 32. Notice, if you will, that the 32 falls in between these. The exact number you're looking for isn't always on the table. Tables are like that. So if we had 33 people, we would have had 40% power. If we had 24 people, we would have had 30% power. So since we have 32 people, we would say we have between 30 and 40% power. That's enough precision for what we're doing. And if we have between 30 and 40% power, if we had 33 people, we'd have 40% power and a 60% chance of a type 2 error. If we had 24 people, we would have 30% power and a 70% chance of a type 2 error. So because we have 32, which is in between here, we have between 30 and 40% power and between 60 and 70% chance of a type 2 error. Am I making sense? So now that you know that if you retain the null with this medium-sized effect, you got a 60 to 70% chance that you just screwed up, how do you feel about that? That's the feeling that you want to remember. That's why we do a priori power analyses. That's why we read the literature, we do the analyses, we calculate the effect size, and before we run a study, we do an a priori power analysis to decide what sample size should we have. Sometimes, it saves your ass. For example, the most common number on the planet is 82. Or if it's an ANOVA, 40 people in each group. 41. That number got passed around as if it was magical about 40 years ago. That number then got trimmed down to 30 in a group, or 60 in a correlation, a chi-square, or between groups ANOVA. So let's say that I'm looking for a correlation of 0.4. Those 60 people are going to give me lots of power. But if I'm looking for a 0.2, those same 60 people aren't going to do much for me. You with me? The third great advantage of an effect size and being able to think in effect sizes is effect sizes are the basis for doing a power analysis. Anybody who runs a study without doing an a priori power analysis is likely to be making a mistake, because the common rules of thumb for what sample sizes to use typically lead to massive amounts of type 2 error. Let's use an example. Now, before we do the example, I want to tell you the answer. The answer is, we have talked about programmatic research, convergent operations, running multiple studies to look for similar results. When we compare studies to each other, We compare them by looking at their effect size. Okay? Say that with me. We compare studies looking at their effect size. Good. Now let's add a couple words. We compare studies looking at their effect size, not the p-values. We Why? Because the p-value is massively influenced by the sample size, by the n. The effect size is not. Large strong studies and small strong studies both give strong effect sizes. But they may give different significance test results. Here's an example. Dr. Yep correlates the number of hours students studied for the exam and percent correct on the exam, found a medium-sized effect that was statistically significant. Dr. Nope checks up on this, maybe because Dr. Nope didn't want to go to the time and effort of making more homework assignments so the students could perform better, just in case Dr. Nope's a dick. Checks up on this by rerunning the study with an N of 20. Finding a linear relationship in the same direction, also found a correlation, but Dr. Nope's correlation had a p greater than 0.05 and was non-significant. Now, before I ask you the important question, say it again. We compare studies by looking at their, not their. So, having just said that out loud, do Dr. Yep and Dr. Nope have the same result? Look at the R. Look at the effect size. They both found a medium-sized effect, right? R is 0.3. We would say those results are comparable. So what the hell happened with the significance test? Well, Dr. Yep used 50 people. Dr. Nope used 20. Dr. Nope made a type 2 error. The sample size was too small. The study wasn't powerful enough. And Dr. Nope missed it. How are we doing? And this is again why a single number quantitative summary in an effect size is so important. It allows us to compare studies that didn't use the same sample size. How are we doing? Sounds more important than it did 20 minutes ago. Because when you're a young scientist and you don't have a lot of resources and you don't have a lot of time, you often run samples that are too small. And if you're starting a new program of research, you're often running what's called a pilot study, which is as quick and cheap as you can manage. And it typically has a small sample size. Those small sample sizes tend to give non-significant results. But now you know there's a difference between a non-significant result with an effect size of 0.1 and an effect size of 0.4. Because when we compare studies, we compare them using their, not their. How are we doing? So we look at this and we go, okay, so Dr. Yep and Dr. Nope found the same thing. They found a medium-sized effect. Should be doing more homework. The p-value is then tied to the sample size. And the best thing to do is an a priori power analysis so that you've got enough of a sample to not make type 2 errors. Now, the power analysis with R is simple because the table uses R. But we also know that we can take anything else and turn it into an R. So if you ran an ANOVA and you retained the null and you want to know the probability that you screwed up, we turn the F into an R and do a post hoc power analysis. If you ran a chi-square and retained the null and you want to know the probability that you just screwed up, turn the chi-square into an R and do the post hoc power analysis. So, same table we looked at before, only now just trying to emphasize that if the null is false, The probability of getting it right, 1 minus is your power. And the probability of getting it wrong is called beta. Alpha and beta, type 1 and type 2. Let's see. I want to show you this, and then I want to show you another place that has the same information. All right. If you reject the null hypothesis, you might be making a type 1 error, you might be making a type 2 error, or it might be a correct rejection. If you retain the null, you might be committing a type 2 error. Let's see if we can make sure this makes sense. The only way to make a type 1 error is reject the null. Does that make sense? The only way to have a false alarm is to have an alarm. So the only way to get a type 1 error is to reject the null. The only way to get a type 2 error is to retain the null. When you reject the null, you might be making a type 1 or a type 3 error. P is the probability of a type 1 error. It's an estimate. The probability of a type 2 error can be calculated, but it's a pain in the ass. We're not going to do it. You must have had enough power because you rejected the null. This is an awesome little tautology. Power is the ability to reject the null if the null is false. So, if you rejected the null, you must have had enough power to reject the null. Make sense? And so here is, I know you're here, this effect size and power rules has some things on it that are important. First of all, it reminds us that we will use correlations for all of this, all of our effect size. This tells you how to round on the power table. We're going to be going over, I'm going to swap something. We're going to do the story problem review on Friday so that we work through all of these different, using the computator, using the table. I want to get that done quickly. I want us to do that together on Friday. Also, I'm trying to dig out a video of going through this stuff. So you'll have the live version and the video version and the pink things and the demos and the practices to get really good at this. The power table rounds funny. And so take a look at these rounding rules. Here is a table that has exactly the same information that we just talked about. If P is less than 0.05, we reject the null. We might be making a type 1 error. We can't possibly reject the null and make a type 2 error, but we can reject the null and make a type 3. If P is greater than 0.05, type 1 and type 3 are not possible. If we retain the null, the only mistake we can possibly make is a type 2 error. That's one thing to show you. The other thing to show you is this computator. The computator is a collection of calculators for things that I don't want you to have to do by hand. Don't want you memorizing formulas. Don't want you looking up formulas. And so the parts of this that you're going to use are this one right here. And this is what we would use for something like this. If I did a power, if I did an ANOVA, and I told you that my ANOVA was a 2 and was non-significant, and you wanted to look up the post hoc power analysis, you would need an effect size. The way you get the effect size is to use the computator. So let's edit this so we can have it behaving itself. So we put in a correlation, or put it in an F of 2 with 1 and 18 degrees of freedom. click off to the side, and there is our effect size estimate from the F. How are we doing? The other one that you'll use is this one. If I give you a chi-square and you want to do a post-hoc power analysis, you'll need an effect size. So you type in the chi-square value. The degrees of freedom will be in parentheses after that. It's always a 1 for us. And you put in your sample size. Click off to the side. And there's your effect size. How are we doing? It would be good if you got the effect size and power pink thing done before Friday. So if you've been through those and you're comfortable with using the computator, we'll be able to go through the exam prep for the story problems easier. All right, so exam prep for the story problems on Friday. Relax, you've got all of the pieces. We'll put it together in the demos and the preps. Yes?
When I click on the Excel sheet, it doesn't do anything.
For just such an occasion, I also tucked one in the Canvas page. I should email that to everyone. Go to modules. Oh, right there.
Oh, there we go. Insecure content. Are you trying to put a virus on my computer?
That's what it's worried about. It turns out, and I had no idea, that Excel files are a magical way to pass crap around.
I would assume that a lot of different files are a magical way, but it won't still won't let me open it.
Click up. Firefox click might? On that.
Did it text? Here, maybe if we try Firefox. You said that would help on the test.
It's supposed to.
Okay. I thought I had Firefox.
Well, if it's not going to download, we're going to have to send it to you. I'll try sending it to everybody in their email.
So usually I don't have a problem opening up stuff. Oh, that was not.
I want to learn all about Firefox. No, I just want to run it. There you go.
I could have sworn I had Firefox, but...
Okay. All right, so the important thing is the browsers have tightened up, and we're going to have to find another way of reliably getting you that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I don't have a problem with actually making an Excel sheet too. I just need to know what to put in it.
Yes.
Yeah. I forgot to email you back, but thank you for your flexibility and.
Sure, it's what we do. I don't like rules.
I don't either. I'll be sure to tell Chris that I'll be in Evan's
Fantastic.
Lab next week.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. For our table, like for the lab assignment,
yes.
Are we supposed to go off of the percent or the valid percent?
Valid percent.
Valid percent.
Because this is everybody. This is just non-missing cases.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Good question. Hey.
Hi. So at the beginning of the semester, you said something about like a room with computers. You
could do yes, that. Room 230.
230, okay.
And the combination is 1 and 3 together,
okay.
Then 2, then 4.
Okay.
The reason for the combination is sometimes the door gets closed, but anytime you can get into the building, you're welcome in the room.
Okay, and there's not going to be like a class in there?
No. That is our space. That's okay. Where office hours are and where we've got 16 computers for us to use.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Hey!
So
stubby little skateboard.
Yeah, it's skateboard. It's cute. Until you fall.
They're all cute until you fall.
Right. Well, with a penny board, it's like, with a bigger board, you got some time. Penny boards, you don't.
That's a good point.
With the Sona credits,
yes.
I'm having trouble with the in-lab.
So's everybody else. I sent a sort of bitchy notice to the Sona person asking whether we could expect there to be more. I haven't heard back yet today, but he's one of my kids, and so I will. So I expect that we're going to relax that constraint as soon as I hear back from
my
him.
My problem isn't the fact that I haven't seen a lot of in-lab stuff. It's the fact that when I try to do it, they call me, and then they're like, you're not available. Like, you're not
something, allowed. Yes. I'm with you.
Yeah, so I didn't know, like...
No, we're just going to change the rule and let you do, and also remind you that there's the alternatives.
Yeah. Well, I didn't remember what those were, though.
There's two different. If you're working in someone's research lab, okay. There's a form you can fill out to get credits for that.
Okay.
Or down in the bottom left-hand corner, it has where you can read research articles and critique those for credit.
Okay, yeah.
And I really like when people do those, because you know how hard you work to learn how to read an article for a couple of weeks?
Right.
By the end of the semester, people plow through those and just nail them.
Right.
It's one of the most exciting things about teaching this course is at the end of it, suddenly people can read articles.
Right.
Which is helpful in your other classes.
Yeah.
And so they're always fun to grade.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Sweet. Yeah, because I was like thinking about that this morning and I was like, ooh, I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Nope, we're going to find, we are not going to require you to do shit you can't do.
Right.
That's just mean. We don't do that.
Because I've already done all the credits for the online portion. I was just waiting for the lab portion.
Gotcha.
So. Yeah, that's all I had. Thank you.
You are welcome. Hi.
Hi. Okay.
The guys.
My shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some skeletons, you know, for October.
It looks like the dead. Those skeletons used to be the icon for a rock band. That particular couple of guys.
I see. Oh, well, I don't think that's what it's supposed to be, but
somebody
sure.
else. Anyway. The copyright ran out.
Yeah. So for the unit one test, is it out of 116, 120?
It's out of 100. Well, there's 120 points, but the proportion is calculated out of 116.
Okay.
The reason is, I do this fancy schmancy statistical analysis after it's all done, and some of the items don't behave themselves.
Mm-hmm.
An item that everybody's getting wrong isn't a good item. An item that isn't that people who are doing well on everything else get wrong isn't a good item.